Welcome to the Thinklings Podcast, a conversation where good thoughts help renew the mind with the Word of God. You're here with Tim, Charlie, Andy, and Josh. Welcome to the conversation.
Booksing Day is the day after Christmas. It's a day when you give books to your friends. We want to encourage you to give good books to your friends. And so at the Faith Bookstore, you can get a 25% discount on a book that you want to give to your friend for Booksing Day. Just mention to my staff that you're purchasing it for a friend for Booksing Day, and they'll give you that discount.
Welcome to a winter-themed Christmas episode of the Thinklings Podcast. How are we doing, gentlemen?
Oh, shalom, chag sameach, you know.
Happy holidays. I'm merry.
You're merry?
Yes. Merry and bright.
I'm wearing a Christmas sweater that's ugly, so I'm super ready for this,
Charlie. It's either Harambe. Jacob Kirkwood or a gorilla.
Yes.
Holding a giant candy cane.
Yep. It's Harambe.
Oh, okay.
Remember?
He Not lives. Jacob.
No.
Okay.
Well,
is it that gorilla that got killed or something?
I think so. I got it around that time and I didn't know.
That is hilarious.
Were you being sarcastic when you said that?
No, I think that's what he was talking
Tim
about.
Tim finally got the cultural reference, everybody.
Yeah, I got it.
I'm doing good. I'm very excited for this. Listeners, we don't know what's happening, except for Charlie. Charlie has come up with the script, and we are very excited. At least two-thirds of us are very excited.
So we'll start
three
off.
Three-fourths.
We'll start two off.
Two-fourths.
One Old Testament of us is a little bit suspicious.
We'll start off with our normal things. So what are we drinking?
This is the Aldea coffee from Michigan that we were drinking last time. It's Honduran. It's not bad.
It's pretty good. Yeah. It's pretty good. And we're ready just to jump right in.
Books and business.
Let's talk about some books. And I will start. I was going to pull this up, guys, and then we got sidetracked. Hold on.
Would you like me to start?
Sure. It's a Christmas episode. Well, it's a winter episode.
It's a winter episode.
Yes.
So I'm currently reading Hidden Critique of Solomon in the Hebrew Bible by somebody whose name I can't pronounce. It's like
Listener Josh is laughing. Sarkio. He is having convulsions. I just think I need to
know. Can you explain why you're laughing?
Tim is the only person who would read that book.
I saw this on the shelf at SBL Press at the SBL conference. Amazing that they have their own press at their own conference, you know. Anyway.
Also the only person who would say that sentence, Josh.
And it just came out here in 2025, and I picked it up immediately because it's a whopping 25% off, which is terrible. But anyway, it was the best price I was going to get on it, and it's Solomon, so it interested me. So in the book of Kings, so 1 Kings 1 through 11, that's the section I'm working through right now. I'm only 40 pages into this, but he talks, the author, Pekah Sarkio. I don't know how to even say that. Do you guys know how to do these umlauts over the A and the O and whatever else? So it's some international scholar. His other book is some...
Can I see a little closer?
German thing.
Is he perhaps a giant robotic samurai ninja?
You can take a look at the back. You can see his other works, which is in another language.
Able to knock down a
I don't
town
know what
hall.
The other language is.
I'm making a Clash of Clans joke and you're missing it.
Yeah, because it's Pekah.
Yeah, that's what I don't know how to. Usually, so what I heard about an umlaut is that you make an O with your mouth, but you say the normal letter, but I don't know how to do it. So, like Bonhoeffer. Bonhoeffer. It's weird. Yeah, I can't do
O
it.
O with the dots is an ur.
Yeah, it's like earth or fern or.
Okay, so after that's German. All done. All right.
I don't know if that's German.
It's not German. So, anyway, this book, it's really actually been very interesting and somewhat helpful. I've really enjoyed it. But working through 1 Kings, I've always kind of wondered, and I haven't done much of a deep dive on 1 Kings, but in those first 11 chapters with the Solomonic narratives, highlighting the years of the construction of, say, like the temple, and then the years of the construction of Solomon's palace, And so he's like, there's a hidden critique. And I don't know how much I really like the word hidden, by the way. It's like, there's a hidden message in the Bible type of a thing. So I prefer not that terminology. But the author is intentionally communicating something through various details. And that Solomon's palace takes 13 years to complete is communicating something, whereas the temple takes 7 years to complete. So 7 is the number of perfection. 13 is like the devil's number, which I didn't know that.
Really?
You have like 12. Mm-hmm.
No way.
He made some comment about it. I haven't validated it or anything, but
that
this
was
is
my
a
number in baseball. I love 13.
13?
Apparently I was
you're a bad
very
boy.
Evil man. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow.
And so that is part of like the critique that his palace was like overblown. And so I've always been suspicious with his marriage to the daughter of Pharaoh because she's not allowed to go into the temple, and it highlights those facts, like the text says, and he's got to find a different place for her and everything. So it almost seemed like the author was critiquing he shouldn't have married the daughter of Pharaoh. Hmm. And so he's highlighted several things. And then even the construction of his throne and the way that it was constructed with the lions on the sides and everything else, its opulence. He says there's a hidden critique. Okay, the author is critiquing his rule, his slave enslaving of the people. It's like the reversion back to Egypt. You have the daughter of Pharaoh. You have this enslaving the people for his construction projects, which is what the Exodus did. So there's all these details which I've been suspicious of, and he's kind of laid it out in a really helpful way. So I'm really enjoying the book, The Hidden Critique of Solomon in the Hebrew Bible, by Pekka something or another, and I'll be probably talking about it again in the future.
I want to jump back to mine because I located it. It's a winter episode. Anyway, which becomes the phrase for doing whatever I want. All right, so I'm gonna read a line, and I want to see if you guys can tell me what it's from. So this is, in context, this is to false views of creation. The Let's line is, such vain babblings the Christian faith condemns as godless. Who said that?
Is this like multiple choice or just got to pull it out of our shoe?
You just got to pull it out of your shoe.
Can you say it again?
In context, in reference to the Gnostic view of creation, the Platonists, and the Epicureans view, such vain babblings the Christian faith condemns as godless. I'll keep reading, see if it'll help you. The true doctrine is that God brought the universe into being out of nothing. God is the fount of goodness, and out of his own goodness he brought man into being, and because he was by his nature incapable of continuance, he endowed him with the exceptional gift of being in God's image. To aid man's free will towards right, he further strengthened the grace given by a law and by a place.
It's not like Lewis and
yeah,
John the
I was
Doc,
thinking
is
a
it?
Lewis book.
Not old enough.
Hmm.
Oh, so it's older.
Augustine.
Warmer.
Oh.
And this is Christmas
there.
Themed.
Oh. Saint Nick.
Oh.
Colder. Christmas is the birth of God, so the incarnation, and this is.
Oh, Athanasius.
Athanasius
there we go.
On the incarnation.
No way. There we go. Charlie, very good.
Which maybe we will, in a future winter episode, have more ramblings from on the incarnation. But that is something I was reading yesterday.
That's really fun. I don't know how in a million years you would have thought we would have known that.
I thought Josh might have been able to pull that out of the hat.
Okay.
Because he's in the Christian classics realms in some of the classes. But
Lewis wrote the preface to that version, right? By... Or is that, am I thinking of something
so
else?
So the copy that I
his,
have...
He was going to be Irenaeus?
No, he does have an introduction to one of those.
The copy that I have is like one of the photocopied PDFs from... it is an old copy from Unwin, Chilworth and London Printers, but it's from some university. Translated by Herbert Binley at Merton College, Oxford. Merton College, also where... I think Malcolm Guite was the chaplain. But I don't. This version, it's not there, but Lewis probably does in another version.
Yeah, he has the preface on the incarnation, and it's currently, you can read it on credomag.com. They have republished it July 22 of 2022.
Yep. Is that on the reading of old books? Is that, I think that's...
I That sounds familiar, yes.
Yeah. Like the preface is the on the reading of old books.
Right.
Yep. That makes sense. But anyway, so probably in a forthcoming episode, we will have more from Athanasius. And so actually,
I love that. That's great.
Actually, your Saint Nick comment was probably the closest. It was colder, but there is the famous, like, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. at the Council of Nicaea, who's there, and they're talking about Arianism, and there's debate as to whether Constantine is there, and, you know, Saint Nick is punching people in the face there. You know, there's some of those fun things. So yeah, Christmassy.
It sounds like a saint. It sounds like Jesus. Go punch people in the face. You know?
You never know. But we anyway, just, that's my just, books and business.
We just had a conference on the Council of Nicaea. It's the 1700 year anniversary of the Council of Nicaea.
I think
this
I
year.
Saw that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can I make a request since it's a winter episode?
I'll allow it.
So we normally go clockwise because there's a person at the table who can't handle going counterclockwise anytime yeah. he plays board games.
Yeah.
May I go next so we're not going counterclockwise for the first time ever in history, Charlie?
But we would be going counterclockwise.
That's we
the
are.
Point.
But Tim doesn't like counterclockwise.
Oh, yeah. Game on.
Excellent. Okay.
That so solved it for him because I don't like it.
That's why I'm like, I bet if I ask, he's going to say yes.
Because it's a winter episode.
Okay. I'm going to recommend the book, The Quotable Lewis. So I've recommended this before, but it's just a book filled with his quotes from various writings. And you can usually get used copies for like a buck plus shipping. It's pretty great. And so if you like Lewis, you can kind of read through this, and scholars who know him well have picked out some of his most important quotes. Now, if you've read Amusing Ourselves to Death, you might think that Neil Postman will come out of the shadows and give you like an elbow to the face for reading all these quotes out of context. But I would say that I see this book more as like generating interest in Lewis. And so today, before the episode started, we were discussing frivolity. And so I thought I should read some quotes. And I looked and I found three quotes on maturity. So here's a couple of quotes from Lewis, just as a nugget for you. All right. These are all from An Experiment in Criticism. Okay. The process of growing up is to be valued for what we gain, not what we lose. So as you grow older, you gain abilities and strengths and whatnot, but often you lament the things you've lost, like youth and vitality. He says, reason you value it is because of what you gain, which is better than what you lose. Interesting. All right. He also says this, excellence in our response to books, like excellence in other things, cannot be had without experience and discipline, and therefore cannot be had by the very young. So he's arguing that you need to read and learn to respond to your reading appropriately, but you don't do that instantly. You have to do this over the long haul, which to me sounds like wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third one is, and this one is perhaps what hits more of our frivolity discussion from before, gentlemen. Nothing is more characteristically juvenile than contempt for juvenility.
Ooh.
Youth's characteristic chronological snobbery. So Lewis is saying that if you have contempt for juvenility, you are yourself juvenile.
Ooh.
Think about that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I get it. I get it. Yeah, he's wrong.
Anyways, I like the book and I've used it many times, maybe in some other thing. Anyways, you might like it.
That was fun. The aging one, that first one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was interesting. We do lament the things that we lose, and it's our youth and our vitality, but we do gain other things as we age.
And there is real loss. I recognize
right.
that. But even the Bible talks about gray hairs and wisdom.
Or no hairs.
Or no hairs. I do think there is a value to growing old in the Lord,
mm-hmm.
and there has been a loss of that in our culture, I would say.
Yeah, good.
Well, about a year ago at this time, I was invited to read a portion of a book at the bookstore, and that was A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. And so I was thinking through that, and in light of our winter episode, I thought, well, let's talk a little bit about the Christmas Carol. I'm not going to talk about it, actually, but I would encourage you to read it. Read it with your kids if you have children over these next few weeks. It's actually delightfully humorous, but there's also a pretty important and good message. And there's all kinds of interesting things about A Christmas Carol. It's been adapted into over 100 movies, things like that. It's very popular. So if you've never read it, you should read it.
I read that to my kids a number of years ago, and they really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. So instead of maybe a Christmas movie, they could read a Christmas book. That's a great idea.
And I don't know if we have these in the bookstore, but Moody has come out with a children's version of Christmas Carol. It's really well done with really nicely done illustrations.
We have that.
Yeah, you have
very,
it.
It's very, very good.
Yeah, I think we have it on sale this month. And it's they have two that they've produced, A Pilgrim's Progress, which was a blockbuster of a hit of a
so
book.
So good.
Did you read it?
So good. We love both of those as a family, especially just with the homegoing thing at the end. That was like very touching for us.
Yeah. And my son Judah has The Pilgrim's Progress one. I think he read it twice. And he's my son. I struggled to get him to read. And then The Christmas Carol, they printed it. It came out last year and they ran out of inventory like in November. It was terrible. And I'm like, okay, somebody missed big time. So anyway, it's on sale now. We have it.
Two things on that. I think Joe Sutphin is the illustrator. And he had an episode on Read Aloud Revival where they interviewed him. It was fascinating to hear him. But then the second thing I would say is, Josh, I have a question for you. When you read that at the bookstore, did you dance?
I've never danced a day in my life.
Oh, okay. Just wondering.
It's frivolities, you guys. Your frivolities.
Nor should you. Who would do such things?
I've danced with my wife.
There you go. One more quick thing. Sorry to cut Andy off, but who knows where that
was
headed.
Good,
so.
Good.
By all means, please cut me off, John.
So Dickens, most of his writing was done serially. So he would often write in installments, monthly installments, and the chapter would be published in the paper. We talked a little bit about this with A Tale of Two Cities, which he actually wrote in weekly installments, which is, I don't know, it sounds a little bit like an undergrad education at the end of the semester where you're working on your papers that you should have been working on all semester. But he wrote A Christmas Carol in 6 weeks, and you can actually go online and see his handwritten manuscript of it, which is really fun to look through and to see. So I'd encourage you to do that too.
All right, gentlemen, let us commence.
Time for the frivolities.
I'm so excited
about
this.
Winter episode.
Charlie, I can't tell you how excited I am.
So if you were to think of a quote from a book that talks about Christmas and winter, what is the first quote you think of that talks about Christmas and winter?
It's Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
What's the quote?
Ever since the evil witch came, it's always been winter and never Christmas. That's first one that jumps out.
So the operating rule of this episode is that a winter episode on the Thinklings podcast will always be Christmas and never winter. Okay?
Well done.
Will always be Christmas and never winter.
Well done.
On a winter episode of the Thinklings podcast.
Did you bring us gifts?
No, well, that's going to be the Booksing Day episode. So, as we talk about Christmas, let's first have some Christmas book discussion. So, I have a series of questions. Just going to roll them on the table, and whoever wants to answer them can answer them. So, what books do you always want to read or reread it would be winter if it was a winter episode, but I'm going to say Christmas time. So what books do you always want to read or reread around Christmas and why?
I'm not much of a rereader, but if I was going to reread anything, it'd probably be Lord of the Rings. And I've thought of even this Christmas season about getting out Lord of the Rings and reading it again, though it'll probably be a listen. We will probably listen to some of it. I don't know if I'll read it.
Does it feel seasonably Christmassy to you? Or
no.
What?
It's just a fun read that I would like to read again. Like, I've watched the movie. I haven't watched the movie actually in quite a while, but I had watched the movie a long time ago a lot. And so I feel like my idea of Lord of the Rings is too, it's too governed by the movie.
It's not, too theatrical.
Yeah, it's too theatrical. So I wouldn't mind reading The Lord of the Rings again and to just kind of enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. I think probably The Hobbit or Lord of the Rings. Those are the first two that came to mind. But then the other one wouldn't be one I've done before. But the second Wing Feather, when they're in the snowy lands, like the ice fields, I think that would be, even though it's not Christmas. The reason I think of The Hobbit is the first year I read The Hobbit, I think it was, yeah, it was Christmas break of 2022. And I was trying to read more with my kids. And so like every night, I think I read The Hobbit with the kids. And at some points it would be like for a full hour. And it was just a fun memory. So I would probably, and I have that really nice edition you got me, Tim, or I've bought, maybe I bought the book store, I can't remember. And that would be, I'd probably pick The Hobbit, but it's not Christmas themed. That's the thing. So.
Speaking of snowy lands, around the Christmas season, I really desire to read Frankenstein. Particularly the Robert Walton parts, the beginning and the end. No, I'm like Tim. I am a rereader, but I have not really even found a book that I like to reread around Christmas because I'm often thinking about the next semester and what I have coming up. And so I'm grabbing those books and starting to read through them or look through them. So I don't have anything that I come back to. Although I did talk about the Christmas Carol or A Christmas Carol, and that is one that I think is worth revisiting at this time.
I think I would say the other thing is usually at Christmas break, it's not rereading. It's just, oh, I get time to read. So, yeah.
Yeah, same. I think reading, we talked about it as like a mental muscle. Like you get better with it the more you do it. And so I like the simile, the metaphor of comparing it to like working out physically, where if you don't ever physically work out, you try to start doing it, there's pain involved, but the consistency grows. But then if you are getting really busy and stressed and you take some time off, you relieving some of that stress then reopens doors to do more. So it's sometimes good to take time and maybe not read so that you can then read more. And so, but I think once the semester gets done, we kind of all get a little bit of a breather and then we're kind of like, oh, you know, and that kind of refreshes you. All right, here's I will also jump onto the Christmas Carol. I don't read it every year, but I would say some iteration of it I intake every year, which put an asterisk on that because we'll come back to that in the next segment. Another question. What biblical books or passages do you think pair best with Christmas reading and reflection? What biblical books or passages pair best with Christmas reading and reflection? And by the way, listener, I didn't prompt them with any of this. So, you know, there might be some pauses as we meditatively consider.
Yeah, I think Luke is the only thing that comes to mind is the nativity story.
Yeah, Luke 1 and 2 and then Matthew.
Isaiah. There's some prophecy in Isaiah. That's
good. Yeah, I've done stuff in Isaiah 7 and 9. Mm-hmm.
We often will read Luke 2 when my wife and her family or our family get together.
We're reading through Matthew as a family right now. And we worked through the, you know, chapter 1 and 2 with the wise men coming. And I was talking to the kids about the different perceptions of how Matthew explains it. You know, you don't have the wise men in the Lucan account. So the emphases of the, so it was a fun time. So those would be. That was a fun one.
And we will look into Luke 1 at the end of this episode. So I'm glad we're on target there. All right. Let's see. A couple more Christmassy questions, which, you know, I'm just using Christmas as a placeholder for winter because it's always Christmas, never winter. All right. What books would you recommend to someone who wants to deepen their understanding of the Incarnation?
You said a book?
Mm-hmm. Or just in general. Any thoughts on where you would send someone who wants to learn more about the Incarnation?
I don't know if I can recommend this, but I think I can. There's a book called The Incomparable Christ by J. Oswald Sanders. I read it a long time ago, and it is the first time. This is like embarrassing. I was 20. 20 or 21, and I was reading it for a class that I was taking through the mail, like correspondence with Moody that I never finished. And it's like online, you know, failure rates before online classes existed.
Yeah.
I was also a youth pastor at the time. But in it, he clearly explained that it was a bodily resurrection and he had a physical body. And that is the first time in my entire life I realized Jesus had a body and he wasn't just a spirit. Which really made me wonder, did I not believe the gospel? I think I did. I just misunderstood theology, but I think I remember it being nourishing. So I think that would probably be okay.
Yeah. Any other thoughts?
I'll offer this tentatively as well, but Behold the Lamb is an album by Andrew Peterson.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And there's an accompanying book by Russ Ramsey by that title, Behold the Lamb. And I read it, I don't know, it's probably been 7 or 8 years ago when we lived in Nashville. We actually went to the Ryman to see Andrew Peterson give that concert. But I read it in preparation for that. And I thought it was really helpful.
Tim, would you like to do the honors?
The honors?
Andrew Peterson.
Oh, friend of the podcast.
Thank you.
So I was actually recently reading Millard Erickson's Christian Theology. A group of men in our church were working through it. And he has an entire chapter on the virgin birth. And I found it very interesting, insightful, and enjoyable. So that's what came to mind, would be like that chapter in Erickson's Christian Theology on the virgin birth, which then made me even think through just, there are several books that have been published on just the virgin birth of Christ, the incarnation. And so if you asked me that question, I'd be like, you know, I would like to just pick up something new and peruse through one of those. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you think too, there's a lot of still active heresy around the virgin birth, especially considering how large Roman Catholicism is, both in our country and others, on, you know, something like the perpetual virginity of Mary,
right,
or you know, the whole Mary folder in your theological file cabinet. Obviously, we mentioned On the Incarnation by Athanasius earlier. And why I think reading a work like that would be so helpful, obviously it's on the incarnation, so you want to learn about that, but it's going to force you then to understand multiple layers of church history and historical theology to kind of unbury what he's talking about. And from a dispensational Baptist perspective, we would read some of the things that he says. Like there's one famous quote where it's like, he became man so that we can become God. And we hear that and we're like, no, bad. But there's things that, not to be anachronistic, where like this is, you know, the 300s, where he's combating Arianism and, you know, pagans, Gentiles who don't believe God exists. He's not really... He doesn't have the hindsight of the theological development of the medieval period of the Reformation. So we would read through Athanasius and question, where's all his justification language? Where's all his legal, you know, understanding of the gospel? And we have that, you know, lock, stock, barrel, because we're post-Reformation. But if you, it forces you to interact with an author, you know, almost 2,000 years ago, and really try to understand what they're saying. And so that's just a great human, mental, spiritual activity to read that and understand it on its own terms. And so that it really is, if you want to understand it, I think it is a project. It's not something that it's not devotional in nature. And so I think that would be very stretching to any of our listeners. It's you know, I perused maybe like the first 30 pages and was already just like, I think this is going to take a little bit more effort than I was intending. But that's a good effort, especially with extra time around Christmas. You can dive into something like that. All right. So that section, just some questions where I thought it was a good, robust discussion of Christmas reading there. Once we you know, have everything set there, trees up, ornaments on the tree, which, you know, you can decide whether you want to do that or not. One of the debates of the season, Christmas movies. So what I would like to know is, do you have a Christmas movie from your childhood that feels like quintessential Christmas nostalgia to you? And then sort of a second corollary question, if you could assign a Christmas movie for every one of our listeners to watch, what would that be and why? So childhood Christmas movie, and you get to assign a Christmas movie to our listeners.
I'm not promoting any. I'm just saying, what did I watch growing up? We always watched that claymation of Santa Claus.
Yeah.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer or whatever.
Yep.
And so if you put that on and I was in the room, I would feel like I'm back as like an 8-year-old at Christmas time. That would be, if you're talking pure nostalgia, that's the nostalgia factor for me.
I have that as number 7 on my top 12 Christmas movies, no which way. Is actually a top 10 Christmas movies because 2 have been redacted.
I have a story for you, but I'm going to wait until you speak when you tell us your movie because okay. I have a story for you. So I'd say that's like my nostalgia one.
You're probably all going to say this as well, but my nostalgia one is Charlie Brown Christmas. I remember seeing it. It was on network television regularly. They might still be. I know they redid that a few years back as well.
So surprisingly, I really never watched any of the Charlie Brown stuff. And so it's not on my list. Maybe I'll have to give that a watch this year.
I think I was so pagan that I only ever watched The Great Pumpkin when it was on TV, but I never saw the Christmas one. But Melissa, she has seen the Christmas one. I think we even have it on something called a DVD. I don't even know if they have those anymore.
I watched Charlie Brown Christmas with my kids, I think, just last year for the first time. I think it was last year, so.
You're good.
You know, I can't think of a nostalgic Christmas movie. I think we watched some movies but
at Christmas, did you just practice multiplication tables?
Yeah, no.
Just a very, Tim seems like he grew up in a very regimented household. So
no,
maybe it was Christmas.
We had fun at Christmas. We had a lot of fun.
I think Tim self-regiments. I think that's how it works.
Anyway, I was, when you first asked the question, I'm like, yeah, there isn't one. So now my wife likes White Christmas. And so I usually edit a few parts out of that just because it drives me crazy. But White Christmas.
Is that, what's that story again? Is that where they go to the hotel?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I saw that for the first time last year.
Yeah, did you?
Melissa introduced me. I did not know about this. And then
it's kind of like a romantic drama nonsense.
Oh, yeah.
It's fun.
No, I thought the ending, especially the way...
Yeah,
it's fun. For the general. I was like, oh, that was
cool.
That was like... They don't make movies like that anymore.
Warm your heart.
Yeah. And now I understand why one of the Skit Chapel lip syncs happened. I understand that now.
I've never watched, so...
What was your second question?
Second question is if you could assign a Christmas movie for every one of our listeners to watch. But first, I will give my nostalgia movies. I think these are classic 90s Christmas movies. One has already been mentioned, Home Alone. I think that's a pretty common Christmas one.
We watched that for the first time last night. The kids got introduced to it.
Fan theory that I've just recently heard about Home Alone is there's like the really upset uncle like throughout the whole movie. And he, you know, when the pizzas show up at the beginning, he's like, oh, my brother's going to pay for that. Fan theory that I thought was really intriguing was that he actually hired the robbers to pull off the heist of his brother while they were all gone because he really doesn't like his brother's family.
Wow.
So it's like they're planning this big trip and while they're gone, he's robbing his own brother. I thought that was really interesting. Huh. Obviously, I don't think it's intended.
On a side note, we watched it with ClearPlay, and it was so great because it just skipped over all the scenes in the brother's room where he's got the horrible posters.
Yeah.
It was great. Yeah. So, like, I just ClearPlay that one, everybody. It's wonderful.
And the other 90s one would be Jingle All the Way with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Never seen it.
And just, it's like, that's a time capsule. It's like a 90s actor It's it 90s is. References. It's a Christmas movie. It's just,
wow.
It's not a particularly good movie, but it just, I feel like that is one of the, that time frame movie. So
I've never seen that, but I was a Schwarzenegger fan growing up in my pagan days, you know? And so I remember seeing that advertised, never saw it.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. So movie that you would assign, a Christmas movie that you would assign our listeners to watch.
Okay. I'll dive in. The year like Robin passed away, 3 weeks later, 4 weeks later, it's like Christmas time. And
oh, you're going down that road.
I'm going down that road.
Yeah. Okay.
And so I'm like, what are we going to do, three of us, after we open presents? And I realized I'm dad and I'm making all the decisions. And so, you know what? We're going to finally watch Lord of the Rings. So I told my kids on Christmas, Adam said, hey, tomorrow on Christmas Eve, we're going to Grandma and Grandpa's house. But on Christmas Day, after we open presents, you guys never heard Christmas Adam? That's like the best joke in the world.
I
every
know.
December 23rd, I'm like, keep Merry going. Christmas, Adam.
This segment is sponsored by the word cringe.
Wait. Why is Christmas Adam the 25th?
23rd.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay.
No, 23rd.
Because it's first.
Yeah, because you have Christmas Eve, Adam, then Christmas Eve, then Christmas Day. Yeah.
Shouldn't it be like Christmas Cain or
keep
Christmas
going,
Abel?
Keep going.
I didn't think about that. Well, I don't know. All right. Anyway. So I told my kids on the 23rd, I said,
frivolities, Tim.
We're going to watch a movie after we open presents, and I'm not going to tell you which one. And at the time, they thought that was great. And I said, but I'll give you a hint. It has a man with a big beard and elves in it. And so they immediately thought Christmas movies. It was Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, Extended Edition. And they set out from Rivendell on their quest on December 25th. Take that. So that's what I would assign.
So there is a, in our circles, a debate of, do you consider Lord of the Rings a Christmas movie? There are a lot of movies that fall into, is this a Christmas movie category?
If people can be postmodern about their taste in coffee, I can be postmodern about what Christmas movies are. So take that.
So there are a lot of movies, redacted, that I think are Christmas movies. But
Josh, I think you had a Christmas movie,
right? Why do you keep
right?
saying redacted?
I actually wouldn't say Lord of the Rings is a Christmas movie.
That's okay.
But I respect your opinion.
That's okay. That's what I would assign, though.
This is a bit challenging. I'm not really one that loves to watch movies. But I really do like The Grinch.
I am so glad you're here.
I forgot about that.
You took The Grinch away from Tim. I thought for sure he's going to be like, you got to watch The Grinch, baby.
And drink vinegar while you do it.
Yeah. Which one is your favorite version?
Okay, this is a good question. That's a good question.
Yeah.
Well, I don't even know I've seen the original cartoon.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I've seen the redux of the Benedict Cumberbatch.
That one.
Oh, I really like that one.
The crunchy snow. Yeah. This is the crunchiest snow I've ever.
And I've seen the Jim Carrey one, which I don't like.
Yeah, that's
so
good.
Really?
The Benedict Cumberbatch one, I
it's my
think is well done, yeah. And I enjoy it.
I'd go Benedict, and then I'd go old, and then I've never seen Carrey, and it sounds like it's terrible.
I actually, of the Grinches, I actually like the Jim Carrey.
Oh.
I think he does such a, like, if I imagine a Grinch character, the first one that pops into my mind is the Jim Carrey Grinch.
Really? Maybe I should give it a shot then. I haven't watched it.
I mean, obviously, I all of this take with the grain of Christmas salt. You know, it's sure. Like, anyway. But the OG cartoon's pretty legit, too.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
Benedict Cumberbatch, he did a
it's
Grinch.
It's so good, Tim. Really? It's really good. Yeah. It's
also
it's really
Smaug.
Good. Yeah, the whole time you can think of the voice of Smaug as the... It's good. Yeah. It's good.
My turn?
Yep.
Assign a Christmas movie. I've been trying to think of something here. And Josh kind of, took the one that I would have really liked there. Can I just vote for the one that he said, The Grinch?
You don't have any other options?
I mean, I could whip something up or whatever, but what would you recommend? You have to, assign it. Assign a Christmas movie.
It could be complete, and I figured one of you would do this, but I'll tee it up for you.
You know what?
I figured someone would assign a movie that has nothing to do with Christmas, and say, you should watch this
instead. He did. It's called Lord of the Rings.
Well, no.
On December 25th.
Yeah, whatever. So for Thanksgiving, we looked up a series of videos on YouTube by Jeffrey the Librarian on the Mayflower, and it was really fascinating. We had a great time at it. It was a really neat thing. I don't know, it was like some boring Jeffrey the Librarian guy on YouTube, and it was right up my alley, and my kids even enjoyed it.
I'll allow it.
And so I would probably like to find something like that on associated with Christmas. L'chaim.
Have any of you seen I Heard the Bells?
No.
No.
It's sad.
That is one of my favorite Christmas carols.
But it's good.
As I Heard the Bells.
So it tells the story of the guy and who he's very famous and I should know. Come on.
Longfellow.
Thank you. It's a biographical story of him and his wrestling with the problem of sorrow because of the great sorrow he experiences. Mm-hmm. That's actually, if I could go back and redact mine, I might actually include that. But that would be one you could submit in there, okay. Tim.
Well, so, if you redact it's really that, good. Then he can pick Lord of the Rings.
No. I thought of something. If I can pick a TV show as opposed to a movie.
Okay.
Mandalorian? Oh.
No, football.
Oh. Just watching football?
Yeah. That's... Football.
Tim, that is so good.
I'll allow it.
There we
well
go.
Done. Well done.
Because the NFL does play on Christmas.
They do.
Now.
They play on Christmas and... I at most family gatherings on Thanksgiving and Christmas, we put the game on and we mute it and we just kind of socialize and it just kind of runs in the background. And it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
After yours, I have a Christmas movie question that okay. I could ask if we have time.
Oh, we've got all the time in the world. I mean, my movie is, you know, Muppet Christmas Carol. Unequivocally, the best version of The Christmas Carol. It should be watched all year round, but if you've never watched it, you should watch it now.
I've never watched it. I will try hard to watch it this Christmas year. Last year, you told me about this, and I thought, I'm going to watch it with the kids, and it showed the kids the preview, and they were super interested.
If you enjoy the story of Christmas Carol, then this, like, because you can watch, like, one of the, like, more serious toned Christmas carols and you can get the moral of the story, but the Muppet version is just so much fun for everybody because you get the story. It's like the Little Christmas Carol, you know, where you change the characters, it brings kids into it a little bit more. The Muppet version is just, it's such a pleasant movie.
That reminded me, there's like a Disney version with Mickey Mouse and Donald or Scrooge the Duck and
yep.
That mm-hmm. one, that, sorry, when you're talking about nostalgia, that's another nostalgia yeah. one for me.
So what is your,
here's my question. Have you guys seen the Christmas movie? It's a Christian Christmas movie called The Nativity.
No.
Okay. So I think if I could assign a movie for someone to watch, I would assign Tim to watch The Nativity.
All right. I've watched some Christmas Christian movies, and they don't go too well.
That's why I'm assigning this one to you, Tim.
It's like grating Mary, on me it's like to Mary watch their perversion
and Joseph
of the account.
Going to Jerusalem, and the whole time, Mary is like, I don't want to have a baby. I want to have my own life. It's like all 21st century feminism.
It's so bad.
It's so bad. But I'm like, I would love to sit with Tim. Like, you guys remember Mystery Science Theater 3000, where they would like play a B-movie in the front row. They would have the background. I would love to be there with Tim while he watches that and have like a little counter in my hand, like a clicker counter for every time he says horrendous. Like one in one hand for that, one for an eye roll in the other.
Well, on that note, on the absolute wrong interpretation of Mary, let's have a final thought from Luke chapter 1, where Mary says some things after she...
I love this.
After she realizes... there's a progression of her understanding of being the mother of the Messiah. And
this sounds magnificent.
Luke chapter 1... So there's Luke 1:26 through 33, or I guess through 38, where she's having the discussion with Gabriel and like, you're going to be the mother of the Messiah. And then In those days, verse 39, Mary arose and went with haste into the hill country to a town in Judah. This is verse 39. And she entered the house of Zechariah and greeted Elizabeth. And when Elizabeth heard the greeting of Mary, the baby leaped in her womb. And Elizabeth was filled with the Holy Spirit. And she exclaimed with a loud cry, "Blessed are you among women, and blessed is the fruit of your womb. And why is this granted to me, that the mother of my Lord should come to me? For behold, when the sound of your greeting came to my ears, the baby in my womb leaped for joy. And blessed is she who believed that there would be a fulfillment of what was spoken to her from the Lord." And then what I would like us to look at, think upon, is what Mary replies with, which it sounds like a psalm. And it, as someone who's taken some Hebrew and Aramaic from Tim, it even reads as if, you know, she probably didn't speak this in Greek. She probably spoke this in Aramaic. But so here's what Mary says, starting in verse 46 through 55. "My soul magnifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior, for he has looked on the humble estate of his servant. For behold, from now on all generations will call me blessed. For he who is mighty has done great things for me, and holy is his name. And his mercy is for those who fear him from generation to generation. He has shown strength with his arm. He has scattered the proud in the thoughts of their hearts. He has brought down the mighty from their thrones and exalted those of humble estate. He has filled the hungry with good things, and the rich he has sent away empty. He has helped his servant Israel in remembrance of his mercy. And he spoke to our fathers, as he spoke to our fathers, to Abraham and to his offspring forever." So I'll just roll the ball across the table. Is there anything from Mary's words here that jumps out to you guys?
Well, she is excited about being the one to carry the Messiah, which, to refer back to that movie, was the opposite. But no, she's very eager to have, she's very eager to have this role, and she sees it as an honor. And she sees it as an honor that she does not deserve, and she's very humble about it, which I think is, that's really striking. Because sometimes when we receive blessings from God, we sort of assume that God owed us that, and I don't get that at all from listening to her. So it's probably a good humility application for us.
Yeah.
I mean, we're just jumping right into this thing, so I don't remember exactly, but when I studied this in the past, there were core connections to the prayer of Hannah in 1 Samuel chapter 2, and I can't remember what those are off of the top of my head, but I know the prayer of Hannah talks about kind of what Andy was talking about, where God exalts those who are humble, and he abases those who are proud. So as we reflect upon those first few lyrics here in the Magnificat, "My soul magnifies the Lord, and my spirit is rejoiced in God, my Savior." And Hannah rejoices in God, her Savior. He is the one that's delivered her. He is the one in whom she should trust, and that's the one whom Mary trusts in as well. The irony is that she has salvation in her womb.
As you were reading, I was just noticing the pronouns that are used, and it starts off, "My soul magnifies the Lord," and there's a few kind of first person pronouns, but then for most of this, it's all about directing our focus to God. He,
yeah.
He, his mercy, he, it just, it's remarkable. I mean, I think were we to be blessed with this message, would we be so selfless as to constantly point people's gaze back to God?
Yeah. And don't have any, you know, we're not going to study this. We're just kind of walking through, grab some low-hanging fruit here. I do think you guys have identified some good things there. So she right away, you know, is just turning the attention to where it's deserved. And worshiping God, and you can ask the question, why does she turn and magnify and rejoice in God. And I think the word I would put here would be faithfulness. That she very clearly ties this back to the promise that God has made thousands of years earlier to Abraham and to the fathers. And we maybe miss a little bit of it. And obviously the word of God is inerrant. The words are chosen. They're selected. God has written here what he wants us to have. But when you read in the Psalms a phrase like, he has helped his servant Israel in remembrance of his mercy, likely the word in the Psalms would be chesed, which would be his covenant faithfulness. And here it's eleus or eleon, the common Greek word for mercy. But very intentionally, the idea that Mary is reflecting on is that God is not just blessing me for something that I am. God, in the incarnation of his son, is bringing the proud down and will exalt those who have faith in him. It's not a human effort. It's a divine effort to scatter the proud, to bring the mighty thrones down, to exalt the Son of God. And that exaltation through the incarnation is the fulfillment of a promise that God made as he spoke to the fathers, to Abraham, and to his offspring forever. And we could launch into many roads of discussion here, you know, trying to connect the dots of the mystery of the church into the incarnation and, you know, what fulfillments are being done here, what promises are still on the table. There's a lot of discussion that way. But very clearly, Mary looks at this as God fulfilling a promise that he made. And that's something that we can rejoice in still, specifically in this promise that God promised to send his son and he needed to be a human so that he could die, so that he could take our place to be our substitute. And we can rejoice in that as it is a necessary component of the gospel, that we don't have salvation without God dying in our place. But then also you can abstract that just maybe one layer and say that God is always going to be faithful to us. And that is a reason for joy. And so one of the phrases that I thought was really interesting, which really is sort of a tangent, but verse 51, if you want to think about what pride is, he, and this is 51b is where we're going to focus, he has scattered the proud in the thoughts of their hearts. And so where does someone who is prideful have their pride? It's in the an unreal zone. It's in their heart. It's in their imagination that they're higher than they actually are. But then how that is followed by something that is physically real, people on mighty thrones. And to think about whether it is the pride in my heart or an actual position I hold, both of those need to be subverted to the exaltation of the Son of God. And I like that flow. And you're right, Tim, that there's a very similar flow in 1 Samuel 2. This is 1 Samuel 2:2 is where we'll start reading. There is none holy like the Lord, for there is none besides you. There is no rock like our God. Talk no more so very proudly. Let not arrogance come from your mouth, for the Lord is a God of knowledge, and by him actions are weighed. The bows of the mighty are broken, but the feeble bind on strength. Those who were full have hired themselves out for bread, but those who were hungry have ceased to hunger. The barren has borne seven, but she who has many children is forlorn. The Lord kills and brings life. He brings down to Sheol and raises up. The Lord makes poor and makes rich. He brings low and he exalts. He raises up the poor from the dust. He lifts the needy from the ash heap to make them sit with princes and inherit a seat of honor. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and on them he has set the world. So again, just focusing your attention on God and his strength there, but very similar. Like, don't be proud. God can lift or lower whoever he wants. And so, yeah, as we wrap up a Christmas episode where it's always Christmas and never winter, we should be thinking like Mary, that what God has done for us is all a work of his grace, and his gift to us in his son is a joyful fulfillment of promise, and we should reflect on his faithfulness to us in the gift of the son, but also in the gift of all the promises that he gives to us. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Thinklings Podcast. We would love to hear from you. If you have any feedback, suggestions, or potential topics that you'd like us to discuss, you can contact us through our email, thinklingspodcast@gmail.com. Remember, don't let this conversation end with this podcast. Read good books, talk about them with your friends, and always continue to cultivate your mind. See you next time on the Thinklings Podcast.